A couple of weeks ago, I posted a video about my exchange with a young woman named Hannah. Hannah had decided that I was a misogynist. And I pointed out in my video that Hannah probably does not understand the definition of the word misogynist, which technically means, you know, the hatred of or aversion to women, essentially. And I expressed very deeply that most men, including myself, do not hate women. In fact, we like women a lot. We spend our whole lives chasing them. We do not hate them. Hatred is not the right word. And then it occurred to me that there are a lot of words that have been co-opted by the feminist movement and by women in society in general that no longer have the meaning that they originally had, or they've been turned and twisted in such a way as to give them a dark overtone, or they've turned them into something that they just aren't. And I think this is critically important because language is really important. Anyway, this is Life 2.0. Let's talk about it. Language is the conversion of thought into form. Think about that for a minute. Really, what we're doing with language is we're trying to, as closely as possible, approximate the ideas and thoughts and beliefs that we have into our heads, into something that is physical, so that someone else can manage it, they can manipulate it, they can think about it, they can understand it. So language is probably the single most important thing that we have as humans. Now, I don't think that language is unique to humans. I see the dogs communicate with each other, they communicate with me, but it's in a very, very different way, obviously. We can convert these very abstract ideas and concepts into words that can then be conveyed back and forth. However, if the definition of these words is lost somehow, then we're no longer talking about the same thoughts anymore. We're talking about something completely different. And this is a huge problem between men and women, because the words that we are using do not mean the same thing to the same people. And they've taken these words, people with agendas, and I'm talking specifically about extremist feminists who have these concepts in their heads that the men are all evil and they hate them. And they've taken these words and they've converted them into something that clearly has an agenda and has nothing to do with the reality that's happening on the ground. Back in the olden days, I'm talking like pre-America days, maybe post-America days, but not within the last 100 years, there was something called a system of managing families called a patriarchy. And in this patriarchy, the men in the family would make important decisions on behalf of the women in the family. Now, you have to keep in mind that in the 1600s and 1700s, it was widely held belief that women did not have the ability to handle concepts that were abstract. Like, their abstract thinking ability was compromised. They were different than men. Now, I agree this belief was incorrect, obviously, but that's where they were coming from. And so this patriarchy was put in place to make these important decisions on behalf of women. Now, in today's day and age, we hear the word patriarchy thrown around a lot. And we do not have a patriarchy in any way, shape, or form. Patriarchy does not exist. Yet, if you were to talk to the average feminist, you would think that this patriarchy is alive and well. Like, it's a conspiracy theory. That's what I think it is. It's like one of those deep, dark, like deep state kind of deals, you know? And we're all getting together behind their back, you know? And we're having meetings, and we're paying dues, and we're conspiring to, you know, reverse the 19th Amendment or something like that. You know, like, they believe that we are in some way planning to hold them down, to keep them in place. And it just speaks to the ignorance of women in general. When men get together to talk about women, I guarantee you that is not what we're talking about. We are not talking about repealing the 19th Amendment. Nope. We're talking about how pretty you are, how nice you smell, how good you are in bed, what a pain in the ass you can be. These are the topics. These are the topics. None of them have anything to do with taking away your rights. None of them. None of them had anything to do with keeping you in your place. None of them. So the idea that there is a patriarchy is a construct of the feminist movement, this ideology out there that is trying to create an atmosphere of fear. Now, I believe that these women, just like politicians, they need fear as an aspect of their ideology in order to keep people in line. Like, if you don't follow us, then something terrible is obviously going to happen. And the patriarchy is that threat that they have. It's like this dark beast that exists in the closets of all women. And if they don't support the feminist ideology and the meme that men are being oppressive to women, then something will be lost. That their dignity, their freedom, their authenticity, their ability to make decisions for themselves will be taken away and will be whooshed back to a time from hundreds of years ago where men will make all the decisions and women will sit quietly and just deal with it. Yeah, there is no patriarchy. It doesn't exist. There is no conspiracy. We do not think about this shit. It just doesn't happen. So for all you women out there who think there's any kind of patriarchy that is in some way conspiring to make your lives less valuable or meaningful, it does not exist. If it does, they have not been inviting me to the meetings, and I'm probably way behind on my dues. But to my knowledge, it does not exist. So please let that one go. Start over. The next word we need to get a handle on is feminism. Feminism, by definition, is the advancement of women to achieve equality, equal opportunities with men. That's basically it. What it has turned into is an ideology that has no room for dissenters. You must follow the track of the leadership or you will be excluded from the organization. And if you're a woman, the last thing you want is to be looked at upon as if you are anti-feminist. Because an anti-feminist woman is going to be excluded from the feminine society as a whole. Feminism is oppressive. Feminism is turned into an anti-man movement. It's not so much a pro-female movement anymore. The way that it is being used in our society is to exclude people, not include people. And any ideology that is exclusive is doomed to fail. FYI, exclusivity is not what we're here to do. Inclusivity is the theme of what it is to be human. It's about including more and more people. It's about broadening the human tent, if you will, so we can include everyone and understand that we're all in here together. We're all suffering the same bullshit. But feminism is trying to say, no. We are the ones who are really suffering and you are the ones who are causing it. Yeah, that's just not true. Sexism and misogyny overlap to some degree. We already talked about misogyny just a minute ago, so let's get into its lesser cousin, sexism. Sexism, by definition, is the belief that one gender is generally better than the other only because of their gender. Like, just because you're a man, you're better than all women, no matter what. The lowest man is better than the best woman all the time, no matter what. That is not necessarily the way it is played out in our society. Sexism really does not exist in that format. I know that women like to point their finger to it in the same way they point to misogyny and say that that's a general state of being that we are in, and that is not the case at all. Now, does that mean that there are not misogynistic men or there are not sexist men? Yeah, no, it doesn't. Obviously, that's the case. But does that also mean that there are not misandrist women and sexist women? No. And I think that women tend to forget that as human beings, there is a wide variation between individuals. Like, we're not all stereotypical one particular way. So just because you find a man who behaves in a sexist way at a particular time does not mean, number one, that that man is necessarily a sexist or that the entire male gender is sexist. Yet they are quick to think that right away. They have one guy say one thing that they interpret as being sexist, and they immediately jump to the conclusion that that guy is a sexist, and not only that, but all guys are sexist. And this is how we get here. This is how we get to a place where our language and our thoughts and our ideas get out of sync with one another because of the meme that is created from this perspective. And it's so comforting in a way to go to the extremes, because when you're at the extreme, you can't go any further in that direction. And so your back is against a wall. And so when your back is against a wall, you get a sense of safety. This is something that I learned from cops. They always want to stand with their back against a wall because it makes them feel safe. Well, I think in ideology, the same thing happens. People want to put themselves out at the extremes because it makes them feel safe. They can't be attacked from that side, from the other side of that. The problem is that the wall keeps moving further and further and further back. And so you got to keep pushing and pushing and pushing yourself to that extreme, to that more extreme position. And this is what's happened with women, just in general. They have glammed on to these ideas because they are providing them with a platform. And these platforms give them attention and validation. And this platform and validation just feeds them, in a way, their egos. Now, it's not all women, but it's a lot of women. And of course, you take social media and you overlay it on top of that, and now you've got this megaphone for these crazy ideas. And this is how our language gets all screwed up. And this is how a conversation that could be had from a rational perspective gets lost in this extreme language, because we no longer have the same words. We're not using the same words. So if a woman says, "I think that a lot of men are extremely sexist," well, you've got to have some foundation for that. Like, first of all, we need to understand what the word sexist means. Then we need to understand, like, which men are you talking about? And then be specific about what behaviors that you're discussing. Because you're taking something extremely vague, and then you're applying a very specific definition to an entire group of people. And it just is nonsensical. I mean, it doesn't make any sense at all. So we need to stop using words outside of their definition, because I think it's causing a lot of the problems that we're experiencing right now. Now, there are some words and terms that women have just made up out of whole cloth, and they have defined these words, and they continue to change the definition of these things all the time. I'm going to just kind of run through a few of these things because I find them humorous and I don't want to spend way too much time on them. But you hear women complain a lot about the male gaze. Oh my God, please do not look upon a woman. You know, I was thinking about it this morning as Debu was staring at me as I'm eating my breakfast. And I'm thinking, can I call it the dog gaze, the Debu gaze? I mean, what do I call that? Like, he's staring at me with hunger in his eyes. You know, he's already eaten. He's fine. He ate before I did. But he's looking at my breakfast thinking, I'd like to have some of that too. Look, we are men. We have been biologically programmed to help procreate the race, to help make sure things keep going. And for whatever reason, Mother Nature, God, whatever, biology, inserted into our DNA the need and desire to have sex. And we like it. We like it a lot. And we can't help it. We can't change that. That's just the way we are. So if you don't like men looking at you like the way Debu was looking at me and my breakfast this morning, then deal with it. It's not something, it's like rain on, do you know what I mean? It's like some days it's going to rain. Some days men are going to look at you like, hey, I really would like to have some fun with you sometime. Like, I can imagine us procreating. I think that we could have some great kids. Don't take it personally. And if you do, take it as a compliment, please. It's not an evil thing. It's nature. It's just the way we are. It's just the way it has always been. It is not a feminist issue. It really isn't. Like I said, it'd be like saying that bad weather is a feminist issue. It's the same thing. It's just the way we are. The next one is emotional labor. Oh, this one is my favorite, probably, because it cracks me up. I have spent so much time with women in my life, and I think I've talked about this in other videos, but going all the way back to being age 12 or 13 until I was into my mid-50s, there was hardly a time when I was not involved in a relationship with a woman of some type. And I have spent the vast majority of that time listening to women and being emotionally supportive to them and helping them solve their problems. That has been almost my MO from the very beginning. I cannot think of a situation where a woman has done emotional labor for me. Now, I guess here's where I'm wrong. My ex-wife did send out birthday cards to my relatives, to my mother and my stepfather and to my father. She did that. Maybe that's what she's talking about with emotional labor. But the truth of the matter is, if I wanted to send them a fucking card, I would have sent it. I'm glad she did it, and it's nice that she did it, but it wasn't important to me. And that's just who I am. That's who I am authentically, you know? If that person feels like they need, in order to feel like I love them, and to be validated, that I need to send them a birthday card, then they will tell me. The truth of the matter is, on most of those occasions, I went and saw them and stopped by the drugstore on my way to their house and bought a card. Do you know what I mean? In most of those situations, that happened. So it's not like I didn't do it. It's just that she did it. I don't know. But it's not emotional labor. That's my point. That is not emotional labor. Emotional labor is when, in my experience, a woman comes to you with what appears to be an insolvable problem, and she wants to dump it on you, and she wants to give you all the reasons why it's unsolvable. And if you have the gall, if you have the balls to offer her a rational solution to whatever that problem is, you were in trouble. You will not be welcomed. I mean, that is not what she's there for. She just wants you to sit there and listen and just deal with it. Now, there are times when they will say, can you solve my problem for me, and I will solve it. But for the most part, men are doing an enormous amount of emotional labor. This is what we have been doing since the beginning of time. Women do not know the definition of the word emotional labor. The next one is emotional intelligence. As long as we're talking about emotions, for some reason, women have convinced themselves that they are emotionally intelligent. And this is a misreading of the playing field, I think. I think what they're doing is they're seeing something that is not what it is. When you combine the word emotional and intelligence, I think they're thinking that because they are so emotional and because they have intelligence, that they must be emotionally intelligent. And that is not the case at all. That is not the case at all. Emotional intelligence is being able to regulate your emotions and express your thoughts despite having strong emotions in a rational way. That is emotional intelligence. What women have is the ability to experience a lot of emotions all at the same time and talk about it. I think that's what they think emotional intelligence is, and that's just not the case. Emotional intelligence is something that men are far, far advanced. In fact, we're so far ahead of women on emotional intelligence, they don't even understand where we are. Like, it's almost as if they are, it's like they're trying to stand on the moon and give directions in Albuquerque, New Mexico. You know what I mean? Like, they just can't even begin to imagine the difference because they're on a different planet. All right, let's talk about the word victim. This is a good one. Women gravitate to victimization. They gravitate to the identity of a victim. They seem to enjoy the concept of victim. From a man's perspective, a victim is someone who has been the recipient of some unexpected and undeserved tragedy. Like, something terrible has happened just out of the blue. Don't know what happened, why it happened, but something terrible happened. You know, the guy was walking down the street and a rock fell on his head, knocked him out, killed him, whatever. That guy's a victim. You know, guy was sitting in traffic, you know, 18-wheeler smashed into his car. That guy, he's a victim. No question about it. Totally innocent victim. Women believe that anytime, anything of any sort that has any negative effect on their life in any way, shape, or form, and it involves, this is critical, in some way, shape, or form, a man, then they are absolutely victims. In fact, they so identify with victims that they want to bring victims into their community. That's why they have the transgender community, they have the LGBTQ A+, whatever they are now, community. They're all in there together in the feminist world, and they're all victims. And I think that the reason why feminists, women in particular, needed all these other people involved is because the actual acts of victimization that occurred to women in the past have become so distant that it's really hard to hold them out anymore in today's world and say, yeah, we're victims. We are the majority of the population, and yeah, we vote at a much higher percentage than anyone else. So it's really hard to be a victim under those circumstances. But if you can find a marginalized community, like the LGBTQA+ people, and you call them victims, and then you co-opt them as part of that victim community, now you can hold yourself out as part of that. Like, you're part of the victim lifestyle. You're in it. I was watching a feminist talk today about feminism, and the first sentence out of her mouth had to do with the LGBTQA+ community. I was looking for a video about feminism from her perspective so that I could research this video a little bit. And the first sentence out of her mouth was all LGBTQ. I was like, well, what did they have to do with you? And then it's like, of course, it's the same stuff. It's the same stuff. That's what it is. By the way, I'm not sure the B actually counts. I mean, being bisexual, so if you take the L's and the G's, you get to about 3, maybe 3.5% of the population. If you take the T's, LGBT, the T's, well, they are just like a fraction of 1%. And the Q's, I'm not sure how the Q fits in to the L's and the B's and the G's. I'm just not sure where Q fits in. And now they've added A, which I think is asexual. I don't know what they're doing in that group at all. They're not having any sex. Why are we adding the A's in with all these other oversex people? And then the plus, is that like just like anyone else who wants to join this group can join? But let's go back to the B's, the bisexuals. They're going both ways. They're having it all. Like, they make up about 8 or 9% of the population or people who self-identify as bisexual. I don't think they fit into that group. I mean, for the most part, I'm thinking, if you're a man having sex with a woman, you're not LGBTQ. Now, if you're having sex with a woman and a man and you like it both ways, I guess, but that just sounds like a proclivity to me. That doesn't sound like an identity. You know what I mean? Like, if you're gay, I think you can identify as gay because that's just who you are. But if you're just a guy who likes to have lots of sex with anyone who will let you, I think you're just pervert. Maybe that's not the right word. Maybe that's not the right word. But I think you just like to have sex. I think you're just less discerning. You're just like, whatever, I'll do it with anybody. You want to go? Let's go. I don't think they deserve to be in there. I don't think that they are a victim group. You know what I mean? It's not like you wear a t-shirt that says I'm bi. You know, you don't fill it out. I don't know. Is there a pronoun for bi? I'm not really sure. So the term glass ceiling has been used a lot over the last 50 or 60 years to explain why there aren't more women in leadership positions. Like, this is it. It's the glass ceiling. They're holding us down. There's oppression. There's opinions and ideas and thoughts about women that make it impossible for them to rise to the highest levels. Well, obviously that's not true, because there's lots of women that are running companies now. You know, we have lots of women in politics now. We've had two women, at least two, run for president. It's not even that big a deal anymore. So I don't know that that glass ceiling idea is true. I believe, more than anything, that the glass ceiling is a cope for lack of leadership. So men, whether it's because of our genetics, our testosterone, our socialization, we gravitate toward leadership positions. We always have. You get into a small group, like I most did jury duty, I don't know, like 25 or 30 years ago, and it was me, a couple of old guys, and a bunch of women. I ended up being the foreman. I was a young, strong, physically fit, opinionated man, you know? And they put me in, they elected me, the foreman of the jury. Leadership is something that is a quality that is unique to individuals. It just so happens that more males individually have that quality. So it stands to reason that we would see more men in leadership positions. It is not a sexist thing at all. It is not about, you know, misogyny or holding people down or any of that bullshit. It's just the natural way of things. It's like saying, well, you don't see a lot of women playing NFL football. Like, that's got to be a problem, right? Not a lot of women in the men's NBA, right? You know, there's not a lot of women on the men's Olympic team, right? Why is that? It's because men are bigger, stronger, faster. It would be an unfair competition. Well, not only are we bigger, stronger, faster, but we also have really good leadership skills. We tend to gravitate toward that. That's a physical characteristic. It's who we are. So comparing yourself is like comparing the girls' basketball team to the boys' basketball team. It's not comparable. It's completely different things that you're talking about there. Now, that doesn't mean there aren't some women who can't play basketball with the best men, because there are. And that doesn't mean there aren't some women who can't be great leaders, because there absolutely are. There absolutely are. But generally speaking, on a population level, you're going to find more men gravitate towards leadership than women. Just the way it is. You can argue that all day long. I will disagree with you until the end of the earth. That's just the way things are. Going strong with the M's now. Let's talk about mansplaining. Mansplaining is a female term to describe any time a man has enlightened them on a topic where they did not want to know the answer. They really just wanted to tell you what their belief system was. And when you corrected them or you tried to help them achieve whatever it is that they were trying to achieve, you are now being accused of mansplaining. This is their way of demonizing our rational approach to life and trying to help them. That's what the irony is. Most times when a man is being accused of mansplaining, he's actually genuinely trying to help usually a woman with a problem or help her understand something that she doesn't seem to have a good grasp of. But because he took the time out to try to explain that, he's going to be demonized and told that he has been mansplaining. And that is an insult to women. Like they couldn't have got it by themselves. Well, the truth of the matter is, most of the time they couldn't have got it by themselves. Most of the time they were struggling with it to begin with. That's why they asked a man to explain it. And when the man explains, now he's a jerk. Now he's mansplaining. Masculinity. There's another good M word. Women think any type of masculine behavior. First of all, let's define masculine behavior. Masculine behavior is the act of expressing confidence, leadership, authority, strength, passion on a particular topic. You know, I think you could probably also include risk-taking. That's another big masculine one. Anyways, we've got all these masculine characteristics. And if a man expresses enough of these characteristics, it means that he is very confident in who he is. He knows who he is as a man. He feels at peace with his masculinity, with what it is to be a man. This is extremely, extremely threatening to women, because women do not have a sense of their femininity. The vast majority of modern women are not at peace with what it means to be a woman. So when they come across a man who seems very at peace with his masculinity, it is a complete threat to them. They do not like that at all, because it's like they have some insight into life and the world and the way things should be that they do not have and they do not understand. And because it's coming from a masculine perspective, it's a threat. They think that it's like it's the other team. Like the other team has an advantage because they've got this guy. This guy seems to know his shit. He seems to be at peace with himself. And there are very few women on this planet that are at peace with themselves. So that means something has to change. The next one, as long as we're on the M's, let's talk about the Me Too movement. This one's bound to get me into some trouble. So when the whole Me Too movement kind of got rolling, I think there was some legitimacy to it. Some of these women were really treated poorly by some of these men. They put themselves into positions where these men took advantage of them. And these men were dirtbags. These men were sociopaths. They were narcissists. They were personality disorder people. These were people who were screwed up in the head. They probably should have been removed from society long, long time ago. These are mentally ill people. However, Me Too grew into a movement that included what seemed to be all women. Like suddenly, every woman who had any kind of a sexual experience with a man that did not go the way they had hoped or that they had some regret with, like they said, I really shouldn't have screwed that guy, he was sort of a loser. Now it turns into a Me Too thing. Now I was sexually taken advantage of. He took advantage of me because on that day, I really, really didn't want to, you know? Or I was, you know, at that party and I was really wanting to be with someone else, and this guy came along and suddenly I went off with him and I really wanted his friend and I regret that, and now I'm a Me Too, I'm a hashtag, you know? What it did, unintentionally or intentionally, is it alienated all men from women. Men generally are now on their defensive anytime they're around a woman that they're not extremely familiar with. And even with the ones you're familiar with, you gotta be really careful with. Because you never know when they're gonna grab hold of that whole Me Too thing and wanna use their victim card and exploit this opportunity to get a lot of validation from the outside. Have people see them as a victim. So you can see all these words kind of play together. How they all fit together. You can fit the victimization, the marginalization, you can get it all in there, you know? The Me Too just kind of encompasses it all, you know? And the feminists just love the Me Too thing because it drew the lines dark with a Sharpie about you guys are just all a bunch of misogynists. You guys hate us, you objectify us, you're this, you're that, you're this, you're that. You're all a bunch of terrible human beings. And it put women in a position to start thinking, well, what are we gonna do with no men, you know? So now you've got a whole subpopulation of women who are afraid to speak out because they're gonna go against the feminist narrative about how bad men are, and they can't find dates, you know, because men are scared to death. They're gonna make a move on some woman, approach her in public, God forbid, strike up a conversation with a woman in public and get shot down most of the time. And that woman's gonna call him out as a creep. Do a hashtag on him, hashtag creep, hashtag me too. Yeah, and all this guy was doing was thinking, with his male gaze, you're looking pretty sweet over there in those jeans, baby. How about I come over there and get your number? And he goes over there and strikes up a totally innocent conversation. You know, how's the weather, babe? How are you doing? And she says, I've got a boyfriend, I've got a friend, I've got a husband, whatever. And next thing you know, she's popping her phone out as you're walking away, and identifying you to the entire world as a creep and a hashtag me too because you went over there and tried to strike up a conversation with her. Anyway, this is the state of our lives now. This is where we have devolved to. The evolution of mankind has come to an end because the genders are no longer going to be communicating with one another because we no longer even have the same language. The abstract thoughts that we have in our heads that we would like to express to each other and have rational conversations with our cohorts with cannot happen because we don't speak the same language anymore. Women have taken this perspective on men and on gender relations and on gender roles that is so extreme that it no longer fits into the natural order of male-female relationships. It almost makes it impossible for especially young guys these days to find a partner, a woman that they would like to spend time with. I'm not sure what the solution to this is. I hate to leave it on a downer like that. I just don't really have a solution for you guys. If you can think of one, please leave it in the comments. I'd love to start a conversation on that and maybe make a video about it. But until then, stay healthy. Oh, first of all, remember, like and subscribe, hit the bell so at least you get notified when I drop a video because, you know, algorithms and YouTube, they're just trying to get your advertising dollars. And if you don't tell them that you want to watch my videos, they're going to feed you some video that gets higher revenue for them, and you will never see my videos again because a lot of my videos get marginalized. There's a good one. A lot of my videos get marginalized by the algorithm because they're controversial, and oftentimes that will lead advertisers to not want to, you know, post their ads in the middle of my videos. Anyway, I've said enough. Till next time, stay healthy, and if you can, stay single.